Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
O'clock hour, Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you. Jay Binkley in for Cody today and tomorrow. Thanks to Bink for hanging out with us. Drew, you're hosting After Hours tonight, right, with Mac Morey. Is that right?
Mac is not going to be.
Oh, no, just you. I'm sorry. It's solo.
Solo.
Solo, Drew. Solo first Drew. Time?
Third time.
It'll be okay.
Solo.
All right.
2 hours tonight.
Be listening tonight.
After Players Only.
7 to 9.
I hope you get stiffed.
I got a DM during the break. It was from a listener. Said, hey, I'm Drew for Halloween. Found this AJ Green Bengals jersey at a Goodwill for $5. It's a picture of our buddy Jacob wearing an AJ Green jersey.
I bet Drew would buy that
with a Cincy hat.
I've already got an AJ Green jersey. I'm all right. But yes, very good choice. I'm glad you're able to find that.
I would say some bad things, but the listener I know and is a nice dude. Otherwise, I could have made a few comments there about really what kind of costume he's wearing. But I don't want to do that to my guy Jacob.
Can you do the icky shuffle?
I've never done it before, but yeah, probably.
You've never done the icky shuffle?
Never done the icky shuffle.
I'm surprised to hear that.
Wow.
Let me know. You know, you don't have to DM. Just tag us on Twitter. Let us know what you're wearing for Halloween tonight.
Tag Bink, too.
Specifically tag Bink based on his Halloween take, as he hates it. He says it's like Valentine's Day now, and it's not about the kids anymore.
It isn't.
One of the weirdest, worst takes I've heard. So
seriously,
we'll get back to that a little bit later, Bink.
Don't forget the children.
913-586-7965 is the text line. You can't send photos that way, thank goodness. Just tag us on Twitter.
Oh, people have tried.
Yeah, thank goodness. Here in about 15 minutes, Dana Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. Of course, he's part of the Chiefs radio network. You'll hear him Monday night when the Chiefs take on the Bucks right here on 96.5 The Fan. So Dana will join us. But Ryan Clark, who I actually think is very, very good. I know that'll sound crazy after the clip I'm about to play you. I actually think Ryan Clark at ESPN is really, really talented at what he does. He's actually one of my favorite ESPN personalities.
I used to think
because
that,
there's a lot of folks on that network now that are full of just hot takes, and it's ludicrous, and they're all just screaming and shouting, and it's basically Scott Van Pelt and Ryan Clark are probably my two favorite ESPN personalities right now. But Ryan Clark was on First Take, and maybe that's the problem. Maybe it was the setting, and that got him all confused and got his mind being a little crazy. Because normally Ryan Clark is a level-headed, very, very, very smart individual. But they were talking about the scariest teams in the AFC, Bank.
The Halloween.
And here's what Ryan Clark said on First Take.
I'm picking the Ravens as the scarier team. Because right now, if you take away history, right, and you take away the things that we knew before 2024, Lamar Jackson is the best player alive, right? The best player living is Lamar Jackson. This is the year that Lamar Jackson becomes the champion. This is the year
Didn't we say that last year?
They were positioned last year to do it.
But here's the other piece of it is, too, though. Last year, the defense was better, right? The defense was better last year, and Lamar started to play great toward the end of the season. He wasn't this animal. Lamar wasn't the animal that every time I watched him walk on the field right now, I know what it's going to be. Lamar Jackson ain't got to win 3 in 1 year. He just has to win 1. And when I watch this team right now, if I'm preparing to play either one of these teams, I'm more comfortable that I'm going to be in the game with Kansas City and I got to just find a way to win at the end than I am walking into Baltimore knowing that they might blow my doors off because I can't stop him.
I don't know how you can say that. I know he was trying to take the past out of it, and he's like, it's not a legacy thing. This is this year. But I'm sorry. When we're talking about Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and the history that does exist, you have to factor that in. When one dude is, 5-1 against the other, that does matter. And the Chiefs did go to their building last year and beat them. So I'm sorry. How can you say Baltimore is the scarier team in the AFC? You know what's scary, Bink? He wants to try to make it about this year. Okay, let's ignore the back-to-back champion stuff. Let's ignore that. That's fine. I'll play along. How about the team that's 7-0, the team that hasn't lost, the team that didn't lose to Cleveland, the team that didn't lose to the Raiders? That team is pretty scary to me. That team happens to be the Kansas City Chiefs.
First of all, I've appreciated Rand Clark's analysis at times. I think he's done a good job. But He's a freaking idiot. Mahomes 4-1 in the regular season, as you say. He's 1-0 in the postseason, so 5-1 against Lamar Jackson. And the win that Lamar won was a gift. I think you were at that game, actually.
I was.
The Ravens actually won it when they were Super Bowl.
Got mooned by Ravens fans on the way out.
Yeah, but here's the one thing about it. Listen. Brian Clark needs to do his homework. Lamar Jackson is 2-4 in the postseason. Mahomes is 15-3. It is tough to get to 15 wins as a quarterback in the postseason in the NFL. As a matter of fact, he's 29 years old. Only two human beings at quarterback have ever won more playoff games than Patrick Mahomes. Number one, Tom Brady. Number two, Joe Montana. Number three, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has 15 postseason wins. Joe Montana has 16, meaning he will pass him probably this year and be number two all time behind Tom Brady. Let's ignore the fact that the Ravens had a much better defense with Mike McDonald last year than what they have now. This is a porous defense. They're 32nd against the pass. They're so bad against the pass that Deontay Johnson trade was a joke because they need to know who they are and get defensive players. They're 20 yards a game worse than Jacksonville. There are 32 teams in the NFL. They are number 32 against the pass. They are number 26 in points against. This is not your daddy's Ravens defense. Not at all. They can't stop a cold. Teams are throwing at will. Yes, they have Derrick Henry. Comes in, he has a nice 60-yard run, 80-yard run at times. And this whole adage, well, can the Chiefs beat the Ravens with a healthy? Well, Derrick Henry was healthy when the Chiefs played them in game one. That is not the end-all be-all because they can't play defense. And let's not ignore the fact Lamar is 2-4 in the postseason. You can't ignore that fact. And you can't ignore the fact that Mahomes is 5-1 against the Ravens, including winning twice in the last 12 months against the Ravens. It's an asinine take that you're discrediting the 7-0 team. You're discrediting the team that has 28 straight games of giving up 28 or less points. Let me put it this way, Alex. The Chiefs have gone 2 years without giving up 30 points. Or 29 points. Put it 29 points. Do you realize the Ravens have given up at least 29 points in three of the last four games? Including twice they've given up over 30 points. They gave up 38 points to Drew's Bengals.
Yeah. Look, we know how the story ends for Baltimore. It's very easy. I mean, this is a really good Baltimore offense that can't stop anybody. We've seen that around here before.
It's the narrative that the defense is good.
Yeah, because you're going back to the historical stuff. Yeah. He's telling us not to think historically about the recent history of why the Chiefs have been.
Historically, they say the Chiefs' offense is not playing. They're 24.9 points a game. That's ninth in the NFL on offense, honestly. Yeah. With this ragtag group of receivers, they're still ninth in the NFL.
He said in that audio not to talk about legacy. Yeah. But to your point, how we view the Ravens defense, if anybody thinks they're good, it's only because of what you have seen over the last 20 years, why you think they're good. They're not. We know how the story ends. Pink, they're a lot like, and I agree with one text, someone said 2018 Chiefs. Yeah, pick any team. You can use that team. We've seen this where a team has a great offense. They can't stop anybody. Usually that gets you out in the postseason. And especially when you're going to play the Chiefs defense, most likely, who, as you also just pointed out, doesn't give up many points. And they're on this long consecutive streak of giving up very little points in the NFL. And the Chiefs, maybe, just maybe, we'll see with injuries, maybe, just maybe, will actually be healthier by the time they play them again than they are currently. I know in week one they were a healthy football team, but they might have Hollywood Brown part of the picture then. They didn't have D-Hop last time. Yeah, I know Rashee Rice won't be available, but I just, the scarier team thing is hilarious. I think the Ravens are very, very good. Don't get me wrong, but I still don't know how you can say that team is scarier than the Kansas City Chiefs at this point. It makes no sense to me. This is just because these shows are trying way too hard. You don't have to do this. Like, you don't have to go out of your way.
They're in second place in their own division. The Chiefs are undefeated. Not only that, but the Chiefs are playing the AFC West. They have two road wins in the AFC West. By the way, Patrick Mahomes is 19-1 on the road in the division. Find another quarterback that's done that. Can't do it. The fact is, people are living on the Ravens' history with great defense, and they're ignoring the fact of the Chiefs' defense and how good it is. They're looking at the old-time Chiefs. Oh, they give a bunch of points, and Patrick Mahomes has to come bail them out. Well, the Chiefs are on pace with, what, two more wins to pass that 07 Ravens team, giving up less than 28 points in 28
Someone
straight games.
Just direct me to a link. Ryan Clark dressed up as Bill Belichick today?
He did it last night on Inside the NFL.
There you go.
Okay.
right. And Belichick dressed like Ryan Clark, like the suit and stuff.
Okay.
Bink's been on a heater today.
He's a freaking idiot.
You are like Scrooge McDuck for Halloween, is what you are, Bink.
I'm on tilt.
I do think though that they're not as good much of a threat as they were last year. The Ravens, like, they were more of a threat last season,
yeah,
because of the defense being good. And Ryan Clark said it himself: Lamar was getting better as the season went on. That was their chance. They're good, and Lamar might be playing at MVP level now, but they're not going to win because of the defense.
Up next, Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs radio network, is going to join us. We're also expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes this hour right here on Cody.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Gold. Back here, Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Drew Nixon with you. Jay Binkley's in for Cody today. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes expected to address the media, come up around 11:45. You'll hear that right here on your home for the Chiefs and home for Kansas City Sports, 96.5 The Fan. Someone else you hear throughout the week, and you'll be hearing on Monday night when the Chiefs take on the Bucks, is our guy Danan Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. And he joins us courtesy of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. Danan, what's going on, man? I hope you had a good trip to Las Vegas. Saw you out there. I know that you were hanging out with Mark McMillan a little bit, what's in store for this week for you?
Well, I mean, we got another home game like we had last week in Vegas, so this is good. So three consecutive home games coming around the holidays is pretty cool. So, yeah, last week was fun. Vegas is great. I feel like I needed an extra day.
Yeah.
There's so much to do out there. That it would have been fun to be there one extra day, but getting the win was optimum, and then coming back home, and then obviously getting a chance to do the meet and greet with my former teammate, Mighty Mouse, Mark McMillan, was fun. So, yeah, it was great all around.
I'll ask you about players only here at the end. I know you got that coming up tonight right here on 96.5 The Fan at 6 o'clock, but it's Halloween. Are you, I know you got, your kids are older now, but are you in the Halloween? Bink was throwing out a hot take earlier that he says it's become Valentine's Day and it's not about the kids anymore and it's just couples dressing up, which I think is crazy. But where are you at?
Christian McCaffrey's dressed like the Tin Man. I'm telling you right now, Danan doesn't do this.
I have noticed in recent years that it seems like more adults dive into Halloween and costumes than when I was younger adult and younger parents. So that dynamic has flipped just a bit, but my wife and I, we have dressed up in the past.
Yeah, I knew it. He said the past.
But, we're not dressing up tonight, and we'll just be sitting out with the grandkids and all the kids in the neighborhood coming by. We got bags and bags of candy, so we'll be ready for it.
That's why Danan's the man.
No, he just said he dresses up.
But not this year, he's not.
No, but he has.
Yeah, my last outfit, and I posted it on social media, was we were both dressed as referees, and we had sunglasses on with the sticks like we were blind. So we were blind refs. Mm-hmm. There you go. That was our last costumes.
I see barbershop. I wonder what he would dress like. I 100% know that. But Danan's the hardest working guy in broadcasting because he goes from the booth down there for interviews as well. Danan, you ever seen anything like that? I know that these games in Vegas has been a ton of Chiefs fans, and I know they had a problem a couple weeks ago with the Steelers fans that just kind of overran the place as well. How bad of a situation is it in Las Vegas kind of cultivating that culture? Because you look at this vision, Danan, if the season stopped right now, three teams from the AFC West would be in the playoffs. Not the Raiders. How big of an issue do they have?
Well, I mean, they're always going to have an uphill battle because of the location where they're at. They got 17 away games. I mean, whether they're playing as a home team or the visiting team comes and makes that a destination, just like the Chiefs fans came out. They had to pump in sound when the Chiefs came on the field. There was a smattering of boos, and Mitch and I were looking around like, this is like 90% red jerseys in there. Who's booing that the Chiefs are coming on the field? So it was obviously manufactured noise, and they have to do that. I mean, that's just the nature of it. They understand it, and they have to live with it. I don't know if you can be a successful team. Maybe 1 year here or there you can be successful. But as far as consistently, I don't know if you can – if that's something that you can drum up in that atmosphere knowing that you're playing 17 away games. So it's unfortunate for them. It's fortunate for us. I do not have any mercy for them. It's cool. And as long as it stays Arrowhead West, I'm good with it.
Just two catches for Hopkins, but man, those two catches, I mean, I got excited, and I think Chiefs fans have to be excited about what is to come for D-Hop in a Chiefs uniform. Those were catches that, and specifically the one right before halftime, that we really haven't seen a wide receiver in a Chiefs uniform make in a while.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I thought he played well with his opportunities. There were times, and I'm fortunate, being in the booth, I know the radio crew recognizes it because every time we go to commercial or we have breaks and pregame, I'm pointing out things that maybe the general fan is not seeing or didn't see. And I noticed several times where he was getting open, and it's just a matter of time. So I don't know if it was more encouraging that he had those two catches and the nature of those catches and the drives that happened, or that he was open other times. And the way it'll go, guys, is that they looked at the film on Monday and Tuesday before they got into their game plan for this week. And I'm sure Patrick Mahomes, as well as Matt Nagy and Andy Reid, looked at it and said, you know what, maybe we went away from him a little quicker. Maybe it's a circumstance where he's, we got to look backside a little bit earlier. Remember that pass? And I mentioned this with Fesco and the guys on Tuesday, the incomplete pass that was thrown from the left hash all the way to the Chiefs sideline. It was a deep out by Xavier Worthy, and I believe it was Jack Jones that made the breakup. On the backside, he ran a really nice deep slant, kind of an in route, but deep slant, and he got leverage. He got pushed off a little bit, got separation. And I feel like that's going to be one of those plays that when they study the film, Patrick's going to be like, oh, okay, I didn't have to throw the ball 50 yards across the field to a wide receiver. He was open right across the middle of the field. So that's part of the growing process. So, yeah, I like the fact that he got ingrained in the offense. He looked comfortable. He didn't look confused. He got a couple of touches. They were quality touches in circumstances, but I was more encouraged with the times when I saw that he didn't get the ball, because I know that that's where they're going to move to. That's where the progression of this offense will go.
And that chemistry will keep building with Mahomes. We'll see that. I mean, they need him for the postseason. I mean, that was the whole Sammy Watkins thing. We need you in the postseason. And I truly believe the second season that D-Hop will be on that same page. Danen is a former wide receiver, someone knows this organization inside and out. The one thing he's got, and this isn't just saying it, this is true. I mean, the guy doesn't drop the football. Everybody does. But 2018, like, he had no drops, 3.6% drop rate in his career. He's got the longest active streak in the NFL going. When you watch him, Danen, does this guy have arguably the best hands we've seen in Kansas City?
Oh, man. So I played with that Tony Gonzalez guy. I do have to give him the nod because of his growth, because his rookie year, he was terrible. And he even mentioned that in his documentary on the NFL Network. So he maybe, like, the jury's still out on D-Hop. I think, you know, guys like he and Larry Fitzgerald, Chris Carter, those are the guys that come to mind that were hands catchers, strong hands, caught the ball in traffic extremely well, and were very dependable as far as hands are concerned. Like, I don't consider Randy Moss a guy that had great hands because he was a body catcher. And I'm nitpicking because these are Hall of Famers, but you get the drift. You get where I'm coming from. So for a guy that has strong hands, that trusts his hands, D-Hop is definitely up there. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he can be integrated more into this offense in that safe space for Patrick Mahomes. Like, we know Patrick is very comfortable throwing to Travis Kelce. He's very comfortable and growing with Noah Gray. He's very comfortable in situations of throwing to Samaje Perine out of the backfield and taking what the defense gives you. Now you have a wide receiver that can give you that component as well. and you know he's going to catch the ball. So it's going to be interesting. Once that true confidence, that true trust is really elevated, we might see a whole new, younger version of D-Hop, and it's going to be fun to see.
Yeah, I was just curious, Dean, what you thought about the receivers, because that's the one thing the Raiders are good at is pass defense. They were eighth in the NFL when the Chiefs played them last week. Like, that's the one area they're actually good at. So I was just kind of curious what you saw from the wide receivers as far as getting open, not having the contested catches, able to create space, because, again, that's what the Raiders actually do well.
Raiders, I mean, they're not a terrible football team. They might be more dysfunctional than terrible, but at the same time, their defense, you know, they're solid, and they don't give up the big plays. And it was formidable. It was a formidable matchup, maybe closer than it really looked because of that last touchdown when we're in prevent defense. But you give them credit where credit's due. We still got to play them one more time. And I'm sure they're going to feel just like last year on Christmas Day. They're going to feel like that's another Super Bowl opportunity or spoiler opportunity for them. They played it well last year. They didn't play it well last week. And, you know, that's the recipe for success in this league is beating teams that you're supposed to beat, regardless of whether you're at home or on the road. And that's what we did.
We're talking to Danen Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. You'll hear him Monday night on 96.5 The Fan as well with Mitch Kling and Dan Israel. Buccaneers, we know about the injuries, Danen, with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, and so they're down to some young receivers right now. They still have Bucky Irving. What have you seen watching earlier in the year and maybe even as you're getting prepped for Monday night for this Bucs team that still put up points last week despite missing those weapons?
Yeah, they are a very well-coached team. They're a confident team. I will say that I'm surprised at their defense. The defense is not playing very well at all. Pretty much near or at the bottom of the league in just about every statistical category, as well as special teams. So that's a little surprising. But offensively, when you lose those two type of playmakers at the wide receiver position for Baker Mayfield, that's like we talked about the Raiders having an uphill battle. Like that's an up the mountain battle for any team, especially in the NFC South. So I feel like with the Buccaneers coming in, they lost two straight games. They don't want to lose three. Again, coming into this atmosphere on Monday Night Football, you know, they're going to have some extra incentive to kind of right the ship and get things going. But, like, they're kind of fractured. They're a fractured team right now trying to figure out things. Now, I will say that, and I don't want to come across like having Mike Evans and having Chris Godwin would be a benefit to us, but I want to also alert the fans that it's not necessarily a true 100% benefit that they're not playing. And the reason why I say that is because when you have guys that you can game plan, that guys are familiar with, that you've played against in the past on the biggest stage, going back to the Super Bowl, like you get to know them. They're going to make their plays. You know their moves. You know, you remember their releases. You remember how they ran their routes, et cetera. Now you have some people that are not necessarily on film to the point of being able to get all the tweaks and little inches and all the different tells that you have. So you're kind of playing against somebody new. And you guys have heard me say, the difference in talent, not saying that Mike Evans is equal to their next guy on their depth chart or vice versa, but the difference in talent is not as extreme as most people think as far as the depth chart in the NFL. So if there was a concern going into this game is the unknown about their receiving core and then how we play them, but I have the utmost confidence in Steve Spagnuolo and Dave Merritt and his defensive staff that they'll have them prepared, but it is going to be a different dynamic.
Yeah, the one thing that they do is they're very good offensively. They're fourth in the NFL as far as total offense, yep. But it's much different without Evans and without Godwin. Yeah. I will say this, they run the ball well. They're 10th in the NFL in running, but look at the Chiefs. Danen, right there, every week you see a star running back not get yards against this team like Madison, 14 carries, 15 yards. I mean, if they're predicated on doing the run against the Chiefs, that's not exactly a good formula. The one guy that I think poses the problem is Kate Otten, the tight end, because the Chiefs have struggled against the tight end this year, and he's their leading receiver with Godwin out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we definitely, and it's kind of one of those things that no matter how good your defense is, there's something that is going to give. You're going to give up something, whether it's to a tight end, whether it's the running game, whether it's a specific wide receiver, whether it's a big guy versus a small guy, et cetera. And we just have to prepare for that. Now, what we do have as far as a benefit for us is that we have a knack for forcing teams to get out of their game plan. Like, we can go back in the history ever since Patrick Mahomes has taken over. You can go game for game where prominent, well-established, tenured coaches, you knew for a fact that they did not practice all week for what they put on the field on Sunday or Monday. And so that's what we have as a benefit on our side. What we have to do, what I think we did better in these last couple of weeks, is capitalizing in the red zone, putting touchdowns on the board, and forcing those teams kind of out of their comfort zone. We are, as far as third down production on offense, we're second in the league behind the Buccaneers, who you mentioned lost two of their big studs at wide receiver. So they're not necessarily the number one team anymore with those guys on the shelf. Red zone, we're getting better, but we're still not where we need to be. If we can put pressure on a team like the Buccaneers, that when we get in the red zone, we are automatically equating to touchdowns, especially with a guy like D-Hop, who can be that possession receiver in tight quarters down there going into the goal line, that will make us much more difficult to play against in regards to staying with your game plan. And so I can envision them saying, you know what, we got to put the ball in Baker Mayfield's hands, and whatever receivers are out there, we got to make it happen, because there's no way we'll be able to stay in this game against Patrick Mahomes if we're scoring touchdowns. So that's what I see, and that's kind of what I envision the rest of the season.
All right, Dane, and players only tonight, right? 6 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. What do you got in store?
Yeah, we're going to have some fun. We had a new little wrinkle to our show last week where I got some interviews with players from the post game. We did some diagnosis of that, and then obviously opened the door up for hot fire, spit fire takes. We allowed the listeners to chime in on that, so we had some fun with that as well. So I'll be in studio by myself, solo. We may have somebody that I'll call on the phone, but players only. We'll continue to rock and roll and be a part of this streak. So,
you know what, Damon? It's gonna be nerve wracking for you, because it's once again two defensive interviews for you, Turk Wharton and Reed. Being an offensive guy, yeah. I know how you feel about defensive guys.
Yeah, man. You know, hey, I gotta take some Maalox or some Pepto Bismol before the broadcast. And you mentioned barbershop. What he's probably dressing up as? He's probably dressing up as an offensive guy.
All right, Dan.
That's what you're a tight end or receiver.
All right, appreciate it, man. We'll be listening tonight.
All right, guys.
There you go. Dane Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver, part of the Chiefs radio network, hosts the Players Only this evening, 6 o'clock on 96.5 The Fan. Dane joins us thanks to Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. Yeah, so Dane will be on 6 to 7. Drew's on from 7 to 9. Now, you said something a short while ago that, when we were discussing college football, that Drew and you guys, that's your guide with college. You said he was in the bathroom. He didn't talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
Is this true, Drew?
Yeah.
You were in the bathroom and you missed Bink's show? I didn't get the whole story.
Here's
what happened?
The guy, the kid's in his mid-20s and didn't have a cell phone. What kid in their mid-20s had that thing cemented in their hand?
He wasn't in the bathroom, Bink.
I was not in the bathroom.
I think that was going back to the Halloween costume thing.
He was in the bathroom or playing video games.
I was not. Mm-hmm. My phone was on silent. That was the first problem. So even if I was by it, if I wasn't paying attention, like if I was watching TV,
you turn your phone on silent when you're at home.
Segment, man. Every Sunday morning, 11 o'clock. Hey, coming up next, Drew Nixon.
I lost track of time, Bink. The phone was on silent, and I checked my phone. I was like, oh, crap. And then
you should go back and listen to the show, because I said, well, without Drew here, I'll just talk about it by myself. We got worried about you.
Dang, all right.
Quentin was texting you. I was. We actually,
for the phone being on silent in the middle of the day.
We worried about you. One, you're dependable. You're like the Maytag Repair Man. You're very dependable.
Thank you.
When Quentin's texting you, and I am, a little bit of me didn't want to make fun of you to make sure you're okay first. But once I found out you're okay, it was on. It was on like Donkey Kong.
I don't remember who it was, but shout out to them. So I looked on Twitter, as I was getting ready. People were like, Drew, are you okay? Are you all right? I was like, yes, I'm fine. I'm trying to be better at not being on my phone all the time.
Well, that was very irresponsible, missing your segment, because that's what you do every week with me. And people love it.
I know. I enjoy it.
We even
have
an intro for you and everything.
I enjoy it as well.
Speaking of Dana, by the way, he's joining us on Players Only tomorrow, too. Him and Mitch Schwartz and Lee Summit. We're in Lee Summit. Dustman's going to come by, too. But Dana will be with us on Lee
Summit.
There
you go.
Nice.
Yeah, I still don't know why. I still am not buying the whole phone silent. I don't know what you were doing.
Yeah, I soaked my balls in Epsom salt.
I don't know if that's what you were doing. I don't know. I mean, you're something.
I probably will not wear pants.
So I don't know, man. I'm just not sure.
There's a greater chance that it does result in some pleasure.
So I'm not sure why Drew didn't call
you
in.
That, Bank.
Something happened.
That.
Whoa.
Up next, Jeez. We're expected to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Find out about the availability, perhaps, of Juju Smith-Schuster on Monday Night Football. That's coming up here on 96.5 The Fan.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Expecting to head out to Arrowhead in just a couple of minutes. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes will speak to the media. Everything pushed back a day since they're Monday Night Football. Normally this would have been on a Wednesday. So if you're wondering why Red Half Hour is starting at a different time and everything, that is why. Bink filling in for Cody today. Good to have you with me. We'll get back into some Halloween stuff during the noon hour today. I'm sure we'll get back to your take about Halloween. We'll also talk a little bit about the candy situation, not only in the building, but also, not at your house, I guess, based off of what you said, but we'll just find out. I think there are two things that are very, very overrated candy-wise, and there's two that just get just crapped on for no reason when it comes to Halloween. I also remember, as I'm staring at it right now, you didn't ask me this time when you were filling in to make a stop for you. I'm watching. I was trying to remember. Hold on. I don't want to look at the container. Last time you filled in, I stopped off at the gas station and I told you I had never bought any before. Yeah, yeah. And I felt like I was like a teenager, you know, whatever, buying condoms for the first time. But it was
ask you to get a Playboy. You
but know. You asked me to buy you some chew. Mm-hmm. And I think the brand, if let me get this right, I think it was Copenhagen winter
long cut wintergreen.
I was gonna thank you.
You didn't let him finish.
Well,
Bink.
No, he wouldn't get
here's the I think he might have actually gotten it right, Bink.
He might have. You know what's funny about this? Well, it's not funny, but I have a problem. But my character concerns partner, Kristen Osero.
Mm-hmm.
I got here the other day and I was like, because I'm not getting around real well right now. But I got here and I didn't have my chew. So Chris stopped at the gas station to give me more chew as well. So I've had two coworkers now go help me out.
All right.
Drew would never do it.
Oh, yeah, you would.
I didn't say that. I wouldn't feel uncomfortable. I'd have the same feeling as Gold. This is new. I'm asking for a chew. I've never
asked
for that
You took me
before.
To Rob's wedding, and we walked damn near 2 miles instead of dropping me
I
off.
I can't believe you didn't drop him off the front door. That's messed up.
No, so hold
That's
on.
That's messed up.
I'm sitting there struggling holding the wall.
I asked you multiple times.
Hold on.
I asked Bink.
Nice of you to drive him, but you didn't drop him off the front door.
No, I could have just taken an Uber at that point.
I asked Bink, do you want me to go drop you off? And you said, no, it's fine.
I almost took an Uber just to get from the car to the wedding.
95 degrees outside.
I know
Bink was sweating his ass off.
Hold on.
I could barely walk. Like I was struggling and you don't give
I was
a damn.
Not the jerk that said, all right, here we go. I asked you multiple times, do you want me to drop you off, Bink? It's okay. I will drive back. And you said, no.
It was one of those rhetorical things. That's kind of like, no, I can, you know.
Yeah, the person, he pushes back, but you're supposed to still do it.
So you wanted me to say, stop saying no, get in my car and I'm dropping you off. That's what you
wanted me to do. It's very nice of you to drive. It's very nice. Drew's a very nice driver.
You drove drunk Bink home from the wedding? That's nice.
Both of us were actually sober, which is incredible that happened.
Well, I know he was driving, so clearly.
Well, I was sober too at the wedding because I didn't feel like getting drinks.
Yeah, I didn't drive. So.
I waited, didn't have a drink for a while, made sure I was okay. And we made it home fine, no problem
you
at all whatsoever.
You dance like a guy that's been drinking, though.
Wait, I was having a good time.
He's Mr. Vic. Dance. At least you didn't put your tie around your head like most people do. We did see that at the wedding, though. But Drew did dance a lot. By himself. Honestly, he's...
Dang. All right, let's go.
I don't even know what you said. But
I said you danced a lot by yourself. I'm right, trying to, you know.
Let's go save me, Gold, please.
Let's go out to Arrowhead. Hear from Andy Reid.
Ethan Driscoll is ill. He won't practice today. And then Nazi, who's getting better with the concussion part of it, can do the walkthroughs. He did that. Is getting better. That he won't practice. So, and then Juju won't practice. But making progress. Mike Danner will be out there, and he will practice. I look forward to the challenge of playing Tampa Bay. We know they're a good football team, very well coached. I mean, Todd does a heck of a job with that crew. Excuse me. Along with his coordinators, they're all top notch guys, and both offensively, defensively, and special teams, they're doing well. So we look forward to that again. That challenge, prepping ourselves this week to get ready to play them. So on Monday night, in particular, right here at GH Field at Arrowhead. So, anyways, with that, time's yours. Yeah, so we've had the benefit of having played against him. So we know he's a very aggressive, good pass rusher, and good all-around player, but good pass rusher. So we'll work him in with the defensive line rotation-wise. As long as he can handle everything, and I wouldn't expect that he wouldn't. So, but he'll start today working in there and getting used to what we do.
You think he'll play?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance. We'll see, though.
And is there any update on Pacheco and whether or not he's getting close to activating him window?
He's getting there, but he's doing fantastic. I mean, he's really doing well, but we just, between the trainers and doctors and all of that, that's out of my hands there. So, but he's making great progress there.
Same kind of question also about Charles Minnichie.
Charles doing a good job too, working his tail off. Again, the surgeons that do the their jobs, they have the feel of it, and so they're constantly evaluating these guys. And when they're ready to go, they're ready to go. I mean, that's how I look at it. But he's getting closer to answer both your questions, and both of them are. So.
What was your need for a guy like Uche? Were you pretty happy with your pass rush when you guys weren't blitzing?
We know how important that position is, and adding him into the mix there, I think, is something that helps us as a football team. So I tell you, that's why we did that.
And you know, going into this year, you guys really wanted to exploit more of the deep passing game. You obviously don't have the personnel, but the fact that really hasn't been unlocked, is that a result of that personnel, what defenses are still doing too? How do you just assess that situation?
Yeah, I mean, defenses are doing a nice job with their shell coverage, which is allowing us to gain a lot of yards underneath. But, I mean, it's just not the big chunk plays. So I'm okay with whatever they present. We defensively, we've got to use what we have there.
So. Andy, with an offensive coordinator like Liam Cohen, what have you kind of seen from him to play Connor? Have you got to kind of talk and interact with him over the years?
No, I haven't. I don't really know him like that, but he's I think he's doing a fantastic job. Their offense is very efficient. Their quarterback is playing great. And he lost two of his primary guys. I mean, he keeps rolling. So the guys that they have in are a little bit smaller guys, very, very fast. And they've got these running backs that are top notch, and not just one of them. They've got a couple of them. So they've got a real good offense, and he uses all of them. Liam does, I'm saying.
You've gotten to be around DeAndre for a little bit longer now. He was pretty late getting here last week. What have you kind of learned about him in meetings and what you saw from him last week?
DeAndre, yeah. He's really handled things the right way. Been very diligent on studying and asking questions and staying late, coming early, the whole deal there. So his role will continue to increase this week. I mean, we're comfortable with that, and I think he's comfortable with it.
Coach, where does it stand with the left tackle position? Do you feel comfortable with Wanya, or is there a temptation to maybe go back and give Kingsley a try?
Yeah, we'll see. Listen, we feel both of them can be starters, so we're just right now it's going to stay Wanya, but I mean, we're lucky to have two guys that are young and growing and that are going to be good Chiefs.
Bye.
Andy, Tershawn's tackle on fourth down, how much does that reflect broader growth that you've seen in him this season?
Which one was that?
Tershawn.
Yeah, Turk. Turk's is one of those guys. Nobody practices harder. Nobody works harder than Turk. And he's not the biggest guy, but he's very he's physical and very strong. So, and has a great lower body for playing inside there and utilize all of it. So, along with his quickness. But I would tell you, from where he came from to where he is today, there's been a lot of work that's gone into it by him and persistence, and it's paying off for him.
And just the defensive line in general, obviously a lot of things had to go right on the goal line stand, but the interior line, I mean, maybe it's self-evident, but how much are they responsible for making that
stand? Absolutely, yeah.
There's a career.
You're listening to Andy Reid on KFNZ FM and AM HD1, HD2 Kansas City in Odyssey Station.
Linebackers and secondary, they all fill their gaps and have to do that job. But, I mean, it's still, it was our D-line. It starts with them.
Coach, similar question to Nick. Just what kind of unique challenge does Todd Bowles present you guys?
Yeah, Todd, who I've had the privilege of working with, very, very intelligent and played in the league a long time. He's got a great feel for defensive football, and he's got a variety of things he can do with it. So he's sharp, and he gives you a lot of different looks. Go ahead.
Is it a small thing to change your schedule from, you know, moving the game to a Monday night? Is that a minor thing, or is that something that you normally would like to kind of have even more notice?
Yeah, you know, we kind of work through some of those things in training camp, different scenarios, a Thursday game. And this year is a little different because we have games all over the place. But Thursday game and Monday night games, we kind of maneuver our schedule there to kind of fit this so the guys are a bit used to it. So I would tell you, no, it's normally the back end of it that's a little bit tougher. Front end, you're okay. It's at the next game as far as it's a shorter prep time. So you got to, you know, you got to look ahead, which we don't like to do. So.
Andy, we're getting close to the halfway point of the season. From your perspective, what do you respect and appreciate most to what Patrick's done so far this year?
Yeah, he's been playing great football. And you look back a couple years ago and teams would show you shell coverage and he had to kind of get used to that whole deal. Now he sees it, handles it, gets it to his guys, gets the ball out of his hands. He's a great player. That's what he manages everything there. So it's like having a coach on the field.
Sam?
Andy, you knew coming into this year play teams would be you guys having won the last two. Obviously, the Raiders had a lot of intensity in that game. What have you just thought about? I know there's a long way to go, but the way that you guys have responded to that part of the challenge.
Sure. Yeah, no, I thought that was great. That was a great game, great atmosphere. Both teams came ready to, you know, fight, and that's it led to that, which was tremendous, great for the rivalry thing that goes on. So, you know how hard the guys work at this. You know how hard the coaches work at it. You want a challenge every week. I mean, that's what you want. I mean, let's go. Let's see what we're all about, and it won't be any different this week. This is a good football team and one of the better teams in the NFC. So it's, we've got to make sure we have a great week of preparation.
Last one, Neil.
Coach, how sweet was it to get your tight end involved? You've gotten other tight ends, but to get number 87 involved in the way you're able to do that?
Yeah, the last few weeks we've been able to get him in positions there where, and really where teams weren't doubling him as much. So, some of it was a multi-formation that we were using in there that helped that. Some of it is Noah, just his production levels up. And you put both those guys in the game and you got to be aware of them. So it's been great though to get him going. He's one of the great ones. And you might slow him down a minute, but not for very long.
Okay, thanks, Coach.
All right, so that was Andy Reid here on 96.5 The Fan. We're expected to hear from Patrick Mahomes momentarily. At the beginning, it was cut off a little bit, but Nazi Johnson, concussion protocol, Juju Smith-Schuster dealing with that hamstring injury, will not participate in practice today. On the positive end, Mike Dana, who's been dealing with that pec injury, he is expected to return to practice today. Now, we don't know if it's limited fashion or not, but that would be a really good sign to get him going again. For Juju, I was hoping we would find out he would practice and be good to go for Monday. The fact he's not practicing today tells me most likely, Bink, don't you think, that they're going to hold him out for one more week?
They're going to hold him back. It is good seeing Dana come back, though, because last 2 years, Chiefs have been number two in the NFL in sacks. They've been kind of middle of the pack, if not the last third this year, although five sacks against the Raiders definitely helps. Trivia question, Drew. Mike Dana and Joshua Uche were teammates in what year at Michigan?
2017?
Nope.
Are you asking me the question, too? 19.
Gold strikes again. Mr. College Football.
Let's go back out there and hear from number 15, Patrick Mahomes.
Against Josh Uche last year with the Patriots, what do you remember about him? What's your sort of game plan for him?
Yeah, I think obviously, a great pass rusher, someone that can really get to the QB, especially in those pass rush situations. I think he does a great job of playing hard the entire time too, which is sometimes you get guys that kind of take their chances in their spots and stuff like that, but he's a guy that gets after it every single snap he gets, and so I think it's a great addition to an already great defense, and I think his specialty will be able to really be emphasized in this defense.
As you're able to integrate DeAndre more and more, what do you think that might do for the downfield passing as you go?
Yeah, I think whenever you're able to put him in there, obviously we're going to be able to hit some throws down the field, but I think hitting him kind of over that medium to long range is going to open up other guys down the field and take pressure off other guys as far as eyes and coverage. And so whenever you got, really two guys, when you talk about DeAndre and Trav, that are all kind of working in that medium type range in the football field, it opens up the deeper throws because teams have to account for that.
What's the challenge been like for you with the injuries and just different people in the room when you guys are trying to work yourself through making all that stuff happen?
Yeah, I think the challenge comes more throughout the week just because you're putting new guys in different positions and asking them to go out there and execute. But once you get the work in throughout the week, I think we've done a great job of executing on game day and hitting some of those throws. I mean, obviously, it's forced guys to have bigger roles than we expected early in the season. But at the same time, I feel like guys have kind of accepted the challenge, and that's why we've been able to win the games that we've been able to win.
Talk about a lot of plays where it seemed like you sort of planted and grew and made up your mind pretty quickly against the Raiders. Is that a result of something you were working on?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just having a good game plan. We had a good feel for what they were going to do, and guys were getting open. And so I gave guys chances to make some plays. And when you play a defense like that with the type of pass rush that they have, you have to get the ball out on time. And so we did that this last week, and now let's build upon it. Let's obviously continue to do that, but let's get back to throwing some of the deep passes and then running the ball as well.
Andy mentioned the fact that a lot of teams playing these shell coverages that a couple of years ago you might have had to sort of read and react to, but you're seeing it quicker. How much is that helping you? And I just wonder if you agree with that assessment.
Yeah, for sure. I think when I was younger, I wanted to throw it deep every time. There's good and bad to that. And so I think more than anything, it's just finding that right balance of still pushing it down the field, but at the same time taking what's there and moving the chains. And I think we've done a great job of that, and I think as we've started to execute better in the red zone, we've been able to score more and more points, and so we're going to continue to just work to get better, and we want to be playing our best football by the end of the year.
With the knowledge that your defense is such a strength, it's been that way for the past 2 years, has it changed a little bit of your offensive mentality even still, just maybe in slightly more conservative in a sense?
I don't want to say more conservative, but definitely once you get a lead, you know that defense is going to get stopped, so we want to go in and score as many points as possible. I'm not going to like we don't want to score. But in certain situations where we might have pressed the issue and try to force something to make something happen, knowing that our defense can get stops and that we can punt and we can get the ball back in a better type of position on the field, it speaks to the entire team. And I think that's something that I've kind of evolved throughout my career.
Patrick, the WNBA is looking to expand as a reporter that you met with the WNBA. Talk about the importance of kind of bringing to Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we want to get basketball to Kansas City in general, and then WNBA and the success that they've had this last season and these last few seasons, it's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, to try to get a WNBA team in Kansas City to this fan base. I mean, you see it if you talk about Kansas, University of Kansas basketball, the Chiefs, or whatever it is, the city of Kansas City is going to come out and they're going to fill the stadium. And so it was cool that we were able to get this soccer team, this women's soccer team here in the current, and they're going into the playoffs now, and you see the support that they have. And so let's try to get a WNBA team in here as well, and kind of that same type ownership group. And they've done the current the right way, and I want to continue to work with them to take that next step and get a WNBA team here.
The Rawls Business School and study marketing down at Tech. How important is that, or how beneficial is that when you were in the room?
Yeah, I think just seeing just how business works, it's helped me throughout my entire career. I mean, the preparation when I went to the Rawls Business School was that I was going to hopefully be a athlete, and I was going to be able to know more than just being an athlete and letting someone else handle all my other businesses outside of football. And it's prepared me to be in some of these meetings that I've been in, and I get to see it from both sides as a player and as a owner, or whatever you want to call it, manager, whatever it is. And it helps me put my perspective and my input into these meetings that I meet with these other leagues, and I can kind of show how hopefully we can make it a great place for owners, but a great place for players as well.
Back to the WNBA for a second. Just can you remind us why it's been important for you to be involved in the Royals and Sporting and everything you're involved with?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just because Kansas City is such a great place for me, it's a place that I call home. It's a place that I built a house at. And that I'll be for a long, long time. And so I think being involved in the community as much as possible, and I love sports. I know how much the city loves sports. And so let's bring as many sports in here and showcase how great Kansas City is, not only as a city, but the people that are in the city as well.
That's enough. Is the timetable on the WNBA talks? I mean, they seem to want to go pretty
fast. Yeah, they want to expand. I mean, just like any other business, you have to kind of pick and choose how to expand. You want to expand as fast as you can, but you want to do it in a way that's profitable for them, but also good for the players and the quality of the sport. And so, obviously, you've seen this last few years, the WNBA has really grown. And so we feel like Kansas City is a great place to continue that growth, but we have to battle with other cities to prove why we can sustain and have a great franchise here.
Establish that this is important to you. How far do you foresee your ownership ventures or investment ventures going in sports? I mean, do you have any broader plan you know right now, or you just will keep moving it?
No, I wouldn't say a broader plan, not necessarily. I think more than anything, I just know how much sports has given to me. And so whenever I'm done playing football, whenever that is, and I have to venture off into life after football and chasing kids around and everything like that, I want to be able to still be a part of it. And so obviously it started early with the Royals, then Sporting, then the current, and now hopefully we can get this WNBA team here. And it's for life after football, so I can still make an impact in all sports. And then at the same time showcase to my daughter that she can follow her dream and go out there and execute whatever that dream is.
Patrick, Jody Forson shared that he tore his ACL.
You're listening to Patrick Mahomes here on 96.5 The Fan. This is Cody and Gold on KFNZ, FM and AM, HD1, HD2, Kansas City, and Odyssey Station.
You know how hard he's worked to get back from the injuries that he's had in the past, and he's such a good dude. I mean, he'll do whatever to be on that football field. He's one of those guys, you're like, go block the middle linebacker. He'll go block the middle linebacker. He'll do whatever it takes to help your team win. And so you feel terrible, I mean, in the locker room after kind of somewhat getting the news, and you don't know for sure, but you kind of know, and you see how much it means for him, and it means a lot for us for him to be out there. And so, obviously, it's terrible news. But at the same time, I know the human, I know the person, I know he'll continue to fight back and give himself another opportunity to get back out on that football field.
Patrick, I know you're not entirely happy with some of the stats this year with the interceptions. The last few have been really kind of out of your control in a couple of ways. On your maturity level at this point, how much easier is it for you to deal with things like that than maybe it would have been 5 years ago when
I think more than anything, If we win, it doesn't hurt as bad. I mean, obviously, I want to be perfect. I want to be great. I don't want to put our defense in bad positions like I did the other day. But at the end of the day, I want to win. And however we have to win the football game, I'm good with it. If that's scoring a lot of touchdowns, that's not scoring touchdowns. If that's running the football, whatever it is, it's playing defense to win football games. I just want to win at the end of the day, and I think we're doing a great job of that.
Emily? Why are women's sports so important to you
I said it a little bit. I mean, I think first, I mean, it's just a showcase to my daughter, who I believe loves sports so far. I mean, it's everything we do. She wants to hit the baseball off the tee. She wants to play soccer. I want to show that she can follow her dreams and make an impact in this world, and whatever that dream is. And then as I've met players and women from other sports that I've kind of been around, including my wife, and show that they didn't get some of the same things that I got coming up as far as the resources and the facilities and stuff like that. So I want to give them those same resources, those same facilities, and you've seen it with the current. Whenever you give them the best of the best, they go out and perform at an even higher level. And so I'm excited for the playoff run we're about to have with the current, and I want to continue to work in women's sports as long as I can.
Okay, thanks, Patrick.
All right, so that was Patrick Mahomes. We were going to talk about the WNBA later this hour anyway, but since obviously that was a decent chunk of his media availability, let's discuss that. You heard Patrick Mahomes. If you hadn't maybe seen the news, now you heard him discuss it. There were reports earlier in the week and over the weekend, I guess, that the WNBA was really looking at expansion and Kansas City was one of the cities. There was the reports yesterday that the Kansas City Current ownership group, the Long family, which also has Brittany and Patrick Mahomes, part of that ownership group, had met with the WNBA. And that's what sparked the conversation in the questions that Patrick was getting. He said, quote, "It's kind of a no-brainer to try to get a WNBA team to Kansas City. I want to take the next step to get a team here." The WNBA is going to get the 13 teams, Bank, next season. Golden State Valkyries is the team, I believe. Yeah. And Toronto and Portland are going to join in 2026, and they want to get the league to 16 teams by 2028. So there's an opportunity for expansion. I think this is really fascinating for a couple reasons. One, obviously, Patrick Mahomes is putting his name behind the push to make this happen, which is a very powerful thing to have. I was reading up on this more. We know Kansas City and St. Louis, there's a rivalry there. St. Louis also wants a team. Jason Tatum, who's from St. Louis, is part of that push. So you got Jason Tatum going up against Patrick Mahomes in a way, because Philadelphia, St. Louis, Kansas City, and I think Miami are the cities that are being discussed for expansion. And Kansas City beat out St. Louis for a World Cup bid, so why the hell can we not beat them out for a WNBA team? And you got Patrick Mahomes behind it. I don't claim to be the biggest WNBA fan. That never have said that, but I'm very much supportive of women's sports. I'm a KC Current season ticket holder. The game's entertaining. The fan support's amazing. They've sold out every single game, and yes, their postseason gets going in the next week. Having Patrick Mahomes involved increases your chances of making this happen. It would be at T-Mobile Center, presumably, is where they would play. Much shorter season. What, 20? You're talking about 20 home games or so, roughly?
About 40 total.
Total,
games,
but 20,
yes.
But 20 home games or so. Yeah, that kind of amount of games, I think this city would support. You know, if it was a 50 or 60 home game schedule, I'd be very skeptical of supporting it. You're telling me the city couldn't support 20 home games for women's basketball? I think this city absolutely would do that.
And it depends on where it leads, because usually WNBA leads the NBA. 9 teams, 7 current, 2 future WNBA teams are associated with NBA teams, because the NBA owns 50% of that league, as we said. But that'd be 75%. That'd be 75% of each town that has a WNBA team has an NBA. So is it, okay, get your footwork in here, see how it does.
Can it
lead to something in the future? Mahomes is all about sports, man. He just loves it. He loves everything. They didn't bring it up, but he owns part of an Alpine racing in F1, like even part owner of F1 racing team as well. So, I mean, he's just involved in NHL, you name it. He likes it if it's a sport.
So Rob Collins put this out yesterday about like the names and stuff like that. This is not like anything reported, but if they got a team, what's the team name? Rob said he likes KC Majesty.
Well, they got to keep with the leader and royalty theme.
Yeah,
somebody else said
theme.
KC Crown, and there was a person who responded said the Kansas City Queens. I think the Majesty sounds unique and pretty sweet. I like that one.
Is that too close to the, what is it, the Mystics? Isn't there a team called the Mystics in the WNBA?
Yes,
is that too close? Is that too close? Mystics, Majesty, are they too close?
Maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe.
Obviously, we're getting ahead of ourselves anyway with the name stuff. But yeah, I think there's a decent chance. The timeline's interesting. Like, is this something that could happen in 2026, or are we going to have to wait till 2028?
Well, how about the Kansas City Regal? That's another Sentinel.
Yeah, like the...
For royalty.
Yeah.
Like the entertainment company.
Like, you mean the movie theater?
Regal. Yeah. It's another term for...
I do think, because you said they want to get to 16. I wonder how quickly, because there's so much interest, if they would just say, you know what, let's just try to get to 18 by 2028. Because there's enough interest there, I wonder
that's probably
if there's enough
too much.
If there's enough backing for the city. Yeah, but still, I think that they,
yeah, I mean,
be
I think it's a fair question. I mean, it's not being a hater on women's sports if you're asking can it be successful and supportive. I think that's just the reality. You have to ask that question. You know, we know
that
the growth.
Is the question,
yeah,
think, yeah,
we know the growth.
I mean, it obviously helps having a Caitlin Clark because
for sure.
Indiana was
yeah,
far
look,
away.
I think yesterday when we were
later.
Talking about this before we knew the Mahomes family basically and the Long family were involved in talking already with the league, and that was my question was, okay, we know the ratings are up for WNBA, that's a fact. Mm-hmm. Massive percentages, whether it was for the WNBA finals or just any of the games, that's all true, but 100% increase, it still was only I think a 1.4 or 5 million on average for the NBA, the WNBA finals. So that's the question. It's like, is the growth going to continue? Is this as good as it's going to get? I don't know. We know we're also in a time though where there's far more interest than ever before for women's sports, and that's an amazing thing. And we all know the Current is the prime example of that in this country, really, right? Now, mm-hmm. not just in the city,
yeah.
this country, in the world, based off of it being the only facility built for women's professional soccer.
And I'll say this much too: down in Riverside, Missouri. Like, where they have their training facility. Like, that is unbelievable. Like, if you ever
yeah,
drive, they're building
there.
An amphitheater down there, too, by the way.
It's they just broke awesome. Ground today, I think.
But
or
it's a real growing area. Mm-hmm. Riverside, Missouri is doing a lot of great things, but that's an impressive complex for what they have.
I don't want to dig too down into the weeds, but somebody texted in from the 816, all the expansion depends on Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins. You know, you're talking about two players that maybe don't have the appeal yeah. necessarily of what Caitlin Clark has done to the sport, but Juju Watkins is, if you watch women's college basketball, she's as impactful of a player as Caitlin Clark and what she does. How that translates to viewership and all that, I think college basketball will be okay. I wonder because they have been, there was reports of the money issues in the WNBA. I wonder with the star names, and Carrington has brought this up before, what stars can you name in college basketball? You can name stars in women's college hoops that you would think can help translate. They've got the TV rights deal that's starting to come out,
maybe,
you know, with Ion and everything.
Maybe I'm wrong on this because obviously Caitlin Clark has been the big draw. I still think if we're talking, I mean, this applies to even the NHL. We were just at a Golden Knights game this past week, and so much of their product is about the in-game entertainment aspect. Yes,
I saw you went there, but here's the funny thing about that. They've cultivated a fan base. That's where the Raiders have struggled to do it. They actually have built a fan base. But.
Yeah, so no, you're right. That's what I was getting to. Is like we can talk about the names, we can talk about the stars all we want, but if you're asking like how has it become successful in Kansas City, if a team expanded here, it would help if you have one of the best players in the league, of course. But for a league like that still, and when you are competing with entertainment dollars with the Chiefs and the Royals and the Current and Sporting, which is what they would be competing against in this market,
KU basketball.
Sure, you have to have the in-game entertainment aspect done. Is it an entertaining product and to go to a game? It's great if you have Caitlin Clark on your team, sure. But is the experience, whether it's for families or not, is that part entertaining? That's what will matter. And I didn't listen yesterday to this segment on the drive, so I don't know. If a couple of you have texted in, I would have to go ask C.Dot and Rob, so I don't want to put words in their mouth. Someone texted in and said that C.Dot and Rob said they wouldn't play at T-Mobile Center. C.Dot said they would need to build a stadium specifically. I don't know if that exactly is what he said, so I don't want to put, but I would say I disagree with that take, if that was the take. I think I... fairly certain they would have to play at T-Mobile
Center. If they
wanted
a team, I think
they're also not building they're also not going to build a small extra arena. Where the hell are they putting? I don't think they're playing out in Independence.
Cable Dahmer could be an option.
Yeah, but what does that hold, Bink?
7,000.
That's not where the WNBA is going with expansion. That is not what they're wanting. Heck, wasn't there just a story on the New York team that how big of a deal it was for them to not play in Westminster?
Yeah,
to go back to playing at Madison Square Garden. Like that was a big deal for why it became. There's part of that. I understand the concern for some games. Do you have to tarp off the upper deck? That's fine. That's a reality. Yeah, it happens. They're not going to have 17,000 people there other than the opener probably or a playoff game.
You're
I, I understand that, but I disagree entirely. I think if the team came to Kansas City and expanded, I don't know why they would play anywhere but T-Mobile
Center.
I think,
and to that point, it being right on power in Power and Light, being able to provide that extra entertainment that you're talking about, Gold, where coming to the game is one thing, but being able to hang out, having that space, like the Big 12 tournament's very successful. They've got the things to do outside of the stadium in Power and Light, finding a way to get it to be an event that people want to just go to or just hang out in that space can help its, I think, case in bringing a team there because of the location.
Well, I think the city's desperate to make that area work because that was the big push with the Royal Stadium where they're going to put it that they could use the bar district for Power and Light.
Yeah, my thing with the WNBA, like the expansion, we can talk about like the financial stuff later, but the concern, the same thing we bring up with any other professional sport is, all right, you're going to add four new teams or whatever. I know the product is better than ever. This is not hating on it. I would say the same thing if the NFL added six teams. Is there enough talent to go around to where it's not watering down the product? I mean, that's not hating. That is a fair thing. I would bring it up if baseball added four new teams as well. Like that's the reality of expansion. You water down the product. Is there enough talent to thin out the rosters even more?
Yeah, that's where I think them having 16 teams eventually. I think just in terms of Kansas City, them expanding to 18 potentially gives you a much greater shot, obviously, because there's more spaces available. If you get to 16, then that's great. But I think that point is very valid where I think there's only two rounds of the WNBA draft, I believe. I don't think there's only one. But
we did not break that draft down.
But, I think that's it's one of that is a valid question where in terms of the product on the court, is it enough where you can have 18 or 20 teams and feel like you're still getting the same product.
Yeah, my guess is the reason why, again, if you're just joining us, we're discussing this, is Patrick Mahomes just spoke to the media and he was asked multiple questions about the reports that Mahomes and the KC Current ownership group met with the WNBA about it, potentially an expansion team. The league is looking to expand. The arena stuff is just interesting, too, because my guess is in those conversations, in order to beat out St. Louis or Philly or Miami, T-Mobile Center would have to be part of the contract and part of the promise to make that happen. I was looking up because I don't claim to be well-versed on the WNBA, but the average WNBA arena on average can accommodate, this is just saying what it accommodates, not what they sell, accommodates around 12,400 fans. The smallest venue is where the Atlanta Dream play. That's the Gateway Center, and that is the least capacity in the entire league, and that's 3,500 seats.
So most of them play where the NBA team plays.
Makes sense, right? I mean, why wouldn't you?
Know, there's more and more people getting involved in ownership. I mean, Tom Brady owns part of that deal with Mark Davis, doesn't he, in Vegas? The Vegas team, didn't Tom Brady own part of that
the
NBA team?
Yeah.
So, well, I
think so.
So T-Mobile here, I just looked it up, said it holds about 20.
Yeah, it's 17 to 20.
I think when Caitlin Clark's here, you're guaranteed to get a sellout every single time because, that obviously creates the buzz that's there. I think that since there's more eyeballs, I think there'd be more interest in it. Plus, if Kansas City had the team, you could average, I don't know what you were giving the capacity.
Capacity,
right?
On average is 12. Not that they were all averaging 12,000. Right, it's lower than that.
I was going to say average attendance.
It's lower.
One's like 4,000.
It'd be great if you could average 7,500 people every single night. You just have to, cave off the top.
We're already
the upper
talking about 20 to 22 games. That's why I think it could succeed. You're not asking to fill, it's not an NBA, this is not the NBA where you're asking to fill 40 plus nights. You're asking to fill 22 games potentially, because I guess they maybe try to expand the schedule a little bit. We'll see. I mean, something to keep an eye on in the into the future, but it sounds like it's a real thing based off of conversations that have happened.
Yeah. Well, T-Mobile Center needs more than Garth Brooks banners hanging in it.
That arena is still one of the busiest in the world.
You know what?
It does very well. AEG is very happy with it.
Like, at some point, they're going to be talking renovations for that. You're talking about a place opened in 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if they were to get an NBA or NHL team, I think it would require some renovations. I don't know if it will for the WNBA.
Already for that.
And they've put in new video boards since the place opened in 2007. So,
I mean, it was not retrofitted. It was fitted for.
Someone
NBA,
says, why not use NHL municipal auditorium? You can't put the WNBA in the municipal auditorium. Sorry. Like, I know the historical nature of the building, and that's something that people are pretty passionate about here in Kansas City for obvious reasons, but they would not put the W. If you put that thing in municipal, that's telling you what you think of the product. That's not a serious venture. With not to take shots at some of these other, but like they were just playing some like low level knockoff arena football game at Muni this year. Like that's for the WNBA is not trying to pin themselves as a minor league, semi-pro league. That's not what it is. That's what goes into municipal auditorium these days, unfortunately.
I think to that point, the fact that T-Mobile Center is so is bigger, has the capacity to be bigger, maybe that's even more appealing to when they're making the case, all the long list of things like, hey, we have the we would have one of the most highest capacity stadiums in the league already, where your product can be exposed to more people because the capacity's there, the environment's there. Look, I think the current obviously is the number one thing. Hey, we're selling out. Forgive me, I don't know how big the capacity is at KP. How big
CPKC,
is it?
A little over 11,000.
They average 11,000 a night. I think you could average for 20 games, you could average at least 7,500 a night, if not more, because the excitement for the city would be there. Obviously, the Caitlin Clark effect and everything else. That might be one of the bigger pitches, actually, that we've got a facility that holds 20,000 people, potentially, which is more than a lot of the facilities that you have. So talk about growing the game. This is a space that you can do it better than maybe another arena that's somewhere else.
All right, coming up next, Spink tells us why he is upset with Halloween. Yeah, today's Halloween. He's upset about it. We'll also get to the random question of the day.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.